Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we're joined by Rick Gates, Chief Pharmacy Officer at Walgreens and newly appointed Chairman of the National Association of Chain Drug Stores, or NACDS. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today, Rick.
No, it's great to be with you.
So today, we're going to be discussing current trends in the retail pharmacy industry. So to start, can you briefly summarize what the current state of retail pharmacy in the U.S. is like?
Yeah, you know, obviously a lot going on in the retail pharmacy space right now, but, probably have to start with the elephant in the room, and that's major news coming out in May when the second largest independent pharmacy declared bankruptcy, right? And so it's a sad moment for the industry and a strong indicator that something truly does need to change. You know, financial pressures are intensifying. You know, pharmacy burnout continues to be a challenge, and access to care is truly a risk when you look at the closures that were just announced. You know, I'm a pharmacist myself, and, you know, I understand this from a personal level, but for those in the professional level, it's really something that a little bit scary, right? Pharmacies are closing at an alarming rate, often due to unfair reimbursement practices by a few large kind of vertically integrated conglomerates. And if the industry doesn't really take a close look at making meaningful changes to the pharmacy reimbursement model, patients will need to look elsewhere for healthcare services. So I just want to put a couple things in perspective for you. You know, before the May announcement, there was an average of 2 pharmacies closing per day throughout the last year. And that was before the announcement in May. Pharmacy deserts are increasing due to these closures, leaving about 57.1 million Americans without a pharmacy nearby. And pharmacies are often the only healthcare provider in some areas, making it critical that they stay open to provide sustainable access to healthcare services in these communities. So it is a big challenge right now and something we have to make sure that we're very mindful of.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you touched on kind of the big things, the overarching things that are really affecting pharmacy right now. So I wanted to kind of segue in and focus on one of those specific things that you discussed, which is pharmacy reimbursement. So what are some of the key barriers right now in pharmacy reimbursement that are impeding pharmacy businesses from operating at sustainable capacity? So you touched on pharmacy benefit managers, maybe kind of dive a little deeper into that.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot in here, honestly, but, you know, there are a few factors that truly contribute to the sustainability of independent unaffiliated pharmacies, but the largest one is what we're talking about, right? Reimbursement models and the reimbursement pressures that we have. You know, like other independent pharmacies, you know, Walgreens relies on private and government health plans and their prospective PBMs to appropriately reimburse our costs for dispensing medications to patients in addition to providing clinical services. But, you know, when I break it down, there's really 3 barriers that I see as challenges in the reimbursement model. And first is, you know, pharmacy needs to be fairly and reasonably dispensed at what we consider to be a rate floor. You know, I think it's a common misconception that pharmacies make money on all drugs. And in many cases, pharmacies lose money on essential prescriptions, making the model quite honestly unsustainable, especially for independent pharmacies. So an example I can give you is many times we're offered dispensing fees of $1. To dispense medications, an amount that's below what's needed to cover the true costs of dispensing. So that's one, a rate floor is kind of what we call it. The second is really patients should be able to go to the pharmacy of their choice, something we call any willing provider. You know, a lot of times these conglomerates, the PBMs steer patients towards pharmacies in their own network, putting unaffiliated community pharmacies at a competitive disadvantage and reducing patient choice, which ultimately is what we want to have, is that patients can choose a pharmacist of their choice. And the third thing is pharmacies should be reimbursed for the services they provide and not just for dispensing medications. So it really comes down to clinical service expansion. You know, I hate to say, but pharmacists, they're not merchants. You know, yes, the current model directly ties reimbursement disproportionately to the margin of the drugs being dispensed instead of the healthcare services and outcomes that they're providing. So when PBMs reimburse below the cost to acquire and dispense medications, pharmacists don't receive reimbursement for healthcare services provided. That's why you're seeing independent pharmacies are facing closures or paring back services or even hours in the communities that they serve. So there are a lot of challenges with the reimbursement model, and I think those are the 3 that I think are top of mind.
We'll definitely get into a little bit more of kind of how this is really unfolding right now in 2025. But before that, I kind of wanted to also touch on some innovative models coming out within pharmacy now and impacting the industry. So with new technologies like AI, there are lots of talks surrounding innovation and modernization within pharmacy practice. Can you explain what this looks like right now?
Yeah, you know, and I've been in pharmacy for 30 years now, and I can tell you, you know, pharmacy hasn't evolved as quickly as it has needed to over time. You know, but pharmacy is really at a turning point. You know, we're focusing, quite honestly, on modernizing our model for the long term. And that means investing in kind of next generation of pharmacy. That's both people and infrastructure, but really rethinking how we operate. So, you know, at Walgreens, you know, we ask ourselves kind of three questions as we look at how do we modernize pharmacy. One is, how do we get more efficient with our teams so that they can deliver more care to the patients and communities that they're in? The second question is, how do we design scalable clinical programs that support chronic care management while driving sustainable growth? And the third and probably the most important is, how do we elevate the pharmacist's role, truly empowering them to fully participate to the top of their education and see community pharmacy as a rewarding long-term career path to really help with some of the staffing challenges we've had? So I'll kind of walk you through some examples that kind of hit on the three of those. The first is AI that you talked about before. You know, so if you think about AI, we leverage it for sometimes simple things, right? How do we optimize our store operations by using the data that we have on our stores to streamline processes like inventory management, staffing, and prescription fulfillment. But we're also using data to better engage our customers by identifying things like gaps in care. So an example there could be patients could be due for a vaccine, they haven't refilled medications at appropriate rates, or they're eligible for a screening through their insurance that we can queue up and have that relevant conversation when the patient is actually in our stores. You know, data really helps trigger our systems so that patients will receive personalized outreach via, it can be email, phone, app notifications, really helping them stay on track with their healthcare plans. So I think it's how we leverage data and leverage AI to really help us optimize the back end of what we're doing. Beyond AI, I think that you probably heard, but we're investing a lot in the infrastructure. And one of those key ones is micro-fulfillment centers. And that's really in direct response to the workload concerns that we've had for our team members in our stores. But actually, we've learned a lot from MSC rollout that's enabling so much more for us than just that, right? Our team members working in stores supported by micro-fulfillment centers are spending less time filling prescriptions and more time on direct patient care. So those things can be things like medication therapy management, adherence support so that they get and stay on their medication, administering vaccines or health screenings, all of which are really important to strengthen the health of the communities that we're in, and a lot of times because we're the only healthcare provider in those communities. The other thing about MSCs is they really do help eliminate routine tasks and excess inventory from our pharmacies to add efficiency, and that's really making a better environment for healthcare workers and where they want to work. You know, I like to put some data behind it. You know, MSCs to date have generated about $500 million in savings by cutting excess inventory and boosting efficiency. But I think what's most important as a pharmacist myself is that these stores that are supported by our micro-fulfillment sites are administering 40% more vaccines than stores that are not supported by micro-fulfillment sites. So it's really having an impact on direct patient care with what we're doing. And the last example I'll give you is, you know, we really have to look at omnichannel and meeting customers where they are. And I think that's something that, you know, you hear lots of things about people going mail order or going to different areas. You know, we really have an omnichannel experience where we're looking at things like digital check-in to improve the experience in the store. You know, we're really optimizing our home delivery for patients that may want that, even though we're seeing a very small uptake in home delivery. Or virtual care. You know, we're really just trying to understand what consumers are looking for and then investing in the things that will really make them want to come and engage with their pharmacy and with Walgreens more often.
Like you said, I feel like obviously a lot of things going on within pharmacy right now are very in flux. Now that can bring uncertainty, but also innovation and opportunities to really improve the practice. So that's really awesome to see. So kind of looking forward for these last few questions, wanted to focus on some specific events, going back to pharmacy benefit managers. What are your thoughts on some of the ongoing state level reform within pharmacy? So with states like Arkansas and Iowa going after pharmacy benefit managers, what does this mean for retail pharmacies going forward?
Yeah, you know, when you look at this, it's largely driven by concerns from local officials about the negative impact that PBM practices are having on communities and obviously closings of pharmacies in their communities. You know, it wasn't that long ago, quite honestly, that patients and policymakers, they weren't very adept in understanding what they did actually and how they operated. But now you see the scrutiny that you just talked about, looking at drug pricing, reimbursement practices, and patient access to medications. But that's because of a growing understanding of what PBMs do. And it's really helped shift the conversation from technical details, which is what we talked about before, to really the tangible community impacts if PBMs are really impacting access to care for patients. You know, pharmacies, and I said it before, are often one of the only healthcare providers within certain areas for a lot of communities. And when you're a local official and that access point closes for your constituents, it begs the question of what truly needs to change. You know, ironically, when you look at this, there were only a few states not too long ago that were leaning into PBM reform, but now it's becoming kind of a national movement. You know, more legislatures are really recognizing the critical role of pharmacies and taking action to preserve it. So just some numbers here. You know, last year when we started, there were about 20 states that were considering regulating PBMs through legislation. And now as we sit here today, all 50 states have bills that would impact PBMs and drug benefits as well. You know, but I think what's important is when you take a step back and look at pharmacy, it's not just about PBM reform. You know, we look at it more of how do you save community pharmacy and preserve these access points in the communities that we served. And I look at it as a three-pronged approach here, right? Reimbursement reform that we're talking about is absolutely the number one part. And that's part of what PBM reform is, to really ensure that we're adequately reimbursed for the services and the value that we deliver. But the second one we don't talk about as much is the operating model reform. We need to help really advance permissions to expand infrastructure like our micro-fulfillment centers, centralized services, or even tech ratios to support our practitioners freeing up time to deliver the care they need and not be focused just on putting pills in bottles. And third, we need to expand scope of practice or consistently be able to deliver those across all states. And so that can be through reforms enabling pharmacists to do what we call practice at the top of their license, but that's doing things beyond just medication therapy management. That's looking at medication management more broadly, testing, treatment, and even diagnosis, which it scares people when you say that, but pharmacists are uniquely qualified and can be trained to really supplement, you know, lacks of primary care providers that could be in networks. So, you know, I think where you started is, you know, our reimbursement, would reimbursement fixes really save community pharmacy or stop them from closing? I don't think we really know for sure. But what I can say with confidence is that there's a negative impact on patients, you know, if local community pharmacies continue to close. And there's a critical need for regulatory changes that we just talked about to really help make sure that these accessible healthcare hubs continue to stay open.
I think this has been a great conversation, kind of touching on what's going on right now and how that impacts the future, and not just in pharmacy, but in public health and for patients all around the world. So, awesome. So basically, to cap it off, what are your hopes for retail and community pharmacies in the near future? And do you believe that the industry has the capacity to fulfill these hopes?
I would start by saying, you know, I'm sure you've heard the adage, hope isn't a strategy, right? But I tell you that how I look at this is my strategy is really grounded in experience and urgency. You know, you look at the recent Gallup poll that came out about America's most trusted professions, and pharmacists for the first time in over 10 years were just ranked above primary care physicians, right? So when you look at that, you know, we need to make sure that we have stable, sustainable pharmacy models so patients can continue to access that critical healthcare service. You know, that starts by giving pharmacists the time and resources to focus on care and not just the product. You know, in my 30 years, I've seen this industry change a lot. You know, I was here when PBMs really started to come into proliferation, you know, back in the early 2000s. I saw the value that they did bring into the ecosystem, but we're at a very different point today than we were 15 and 20 years ago. You know, we need smart policy changes that we talked about before, you know, provider status, fair reimbursement, modernized operations for pharmacists to really free them up and have the impact that we know that they can have. And we're already seeing this. You know, vaccines is just the tipping point, but I think you can get into much more advanced care that pharmacists can support. And consumers quite honestly say that they trust pharmacists to do that. And so now it's really up to us, right? How do we fully integrate pharmacy into care teams? How do we actually have the impact that we want to do? I think all these things are going to be critical for us to really have the opportunity that we have. And you said it's hope, but I actually think that we have a bright future if we just kind of get behind a couple of these things in the near term and really help us accelerate the care and the impact that we can have.
I really appreciate you taking the time. It was really great to meet with you and chat with you today.
You as well. Hey, great to meet you all.